Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
The next time y'all hear our voice after this episode, it will be the annual Build the Dungeon Spectacular that we do every year. So I'm getting pretty excited for that. So every year we do this, like, build a dungeon, and then we do an actual play where we play the dungeon after that. So we're recording today for the episode going out, you know, this Thursday, and then a couple days later we're going to get on a call for a couple hours with some very special guests, which you will get introduced to on that episode, to actually build the dungeon live on air. So it's super exciting. This is, like, kind of my favorite time of podcasting in the year.
I think this is our sixth annual build a dungeon.
It is. I got a list of all the ones we've done in the past. I'm like, wow, there's, like, a lot of these, and I would say they're all pretty good, right? I'm sure some of them are more rough than others,
for sure.
Yeah
Do you have a favorite one that you think about fondly?
There's two that I think about. So there's one, Snake Oil's Last Score, which was kind of a Western that we did. That one was really fun. All the players were super great. I believe that's the first time I had met, and it's definitely the first time I played with Ben of Splatbook.
Oh, okay.
And maybe Toby as well.
Really?
No. I'd played with Toby before. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, it was a really fun group. It was pretty chaotic. It was pretty good. And the other one that I think about is the space station Alpha. I forget what we called it. Hashtag Alpha's space station or something like that.
Yes, right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That one was fun because that one had, like, a pretty broad layout, and there was kind of, like, a strict timer on it about, like, when some stuff was going to happen too. Those two were fun. But I've got a fondness for all of them that we've done.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think a lot about our Christmas one, which I think was last year.
Yes.
And I probably every 3 weeks I think about the concept of a biblically accurate Santa. What is Santa's true form? And that makes me laugh like an idiot every time I think about it. So
it's good. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Well, anyway, but I hope you're listening to this episode, and I hope you listen to the next one as those come out. We love to get those out kind of around the holidays, so especially as people are traveling and stuff.
Yes, for sure.
Yep. So I've got a question related to that I want to ask you in a bit, but I did want to check in with you about a few media things. My wife and I just finished watching the first four episodes of Stranger Things season 5, or I think they're calling it, like, you know, they're calling it, like, book 5 or something like that. But yeah,
of course. Yeah.
It was really good. I know that you've sort of dropped off on Stranger Things. I really liked this season so far. I think they've got two more episodes coming, like one at Christmas and one at New Year's, to kind of wrap up the entire show. It's really good. It feels like it's kind of, like, back to its true form, and they're just, like, kind of racing towards a conclusion in a really fun way. So I know you kind of dropped off.
Well, here's my question for you. Okay. I dropped off, I think, in early season 4.
Okay.
Because it felt like the show had strayed. It had become very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like it had strayed pretty far from, like, kids on bikes fighting a monster.
Yeah.
And I don't, that's okay. It's just not, like, what I loved about early Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way they are wrapping it up, is that going to appeal to me, or is it leaning into, like, kind of the increased complexity of seasons 3 and 4?
It's definitely more complex, although I would say it does feel more of the, like, the kids on bike style adventure. Even though, right, they're older now, right? Like, actually much older in real life, but
they're all, like, 32.
Show they're, you know, like 2 or 3 years older or whatever, but so I think it would appeal to you on that level of, like, it's still just sort of a fun adventure, fun kind of, like, you know, like, yeah, fun adventure. There's definitely some supernatural stuff in it, you know. There's definitely some, like, you know, everybody's sort of an action star. Mm-hmm. Stuff, but yeah, I think it's good. I mean, you'd know pretty fast, I think, if the whole thing's going to be for you, if you just watch one episode. And I would say, I'd go out on a limb that you could probably watch or read a quick kind of explainer about, like, what you missed from season 4 and get up to speed enough to enjoy it. But what I like about it, just from, like, a gaming perspective, right, thinking about that, is, like, and this is something I've liked about the show since the beginning, is they do a really good job of taking characters that you might not normally think would be interacting with each other in the show, right? Because like the cast is huge at this point, right? There's like, you know, 20 named characters, and they feel like you have their backstories, all of them. But they will do a really good job of kind of like picking off like two characters and putting them together and kind of seeing what sort of adventures they get up to.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right. And like from like a gaming perspective, I think that's really fun. Like those are always my favorite moments at the table is when two characters who like really shouldn't be the ones going to do some sort of action decide to team up to like go off by themselves, right? So they've split the party, there's like two or three of them together, and you kind of get to explore a little bit like, you know, like what would the interaction between, you know, these people, like these characters, like like how would that end up working out. So I really like that, and I think the show does a really good job of that, of kind of constantly mixing that up a little bit. So anyway,
that's interesting. My RPG brain thing lately has been, so I've been playing, my stress relief is the recent Doom games from published by Bethesda. So starting in 2016, they've published a couple Doom games. That's my like I need to blow off steam game. So I've been playing the latest one. It's called Doom Dark Ages.
That's like the medieval one, right?
Yes, it is. It's got this medieval aesthetic, and it has me thinking about boring RPG encounters, like your ambush with goblins or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because so what this Doom game does, and the other ones do too, is like they pretty much, after like by the time you're a couple hours in, you've seen basically every monster that there is going to be in the entire game. Like they'll like introduce late game, they'll introduce, you know, something special or whatever, but generally speaking, you have seen all the ingredients that they use pretty early on. And so the rest of the game is like basically you stumble into a big kind of a big set piece arena type thing, and there will be some combination of all those ingredients in there for you to deal with. Mm-hmm. And you've seen all of these creatures before. But the genius of these games is that just by combining them in different ways than you've dealt with before, it feels new and exciting. Mm-hmm. So that's just, it has me thinking about those like mostly low-level D&D type encounters. Like we fought a million goblins, you fought a million giant rats, right? Mm-hmm. And you fought a million half-orcs or hobgoblins or whatever. But sometimes just like, well, in this encounter, there's like four goblins and a hobgoblin archer. And that can like totally change, like that becomes a new, unique and challenging thing that would have been boring if it were just the four orcs or just five orcs or something like that. So it just has me thinking about like, you know, you don't always need to come up with like a new exciting encounter. Like, it's fine to take stuff that maybe you haven't used in combination before and throw those into the mix.
Yes.
And see what sort of tactical or narrative, like, tension comes out of your new combination. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I guess that's a little bit of a tortured connection. But, you know, I think about this stuff all the time because I'm a GMing idiot. So,
yeah.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, the original Doom, right? Like, that's somewhat like where this all started too, right? Because it's like, what, there's six to eight enemy types in that,
yes,
you know, in the original one. And like, you know, I mean, what, you couldn't even like aim up and down, right? It just sort of auto aim for you, right? So like there's some kind of verticality to it too, you know, just like handful of enemy types and secret doors and stuff. But just with that, I mean, this is credit to the game, like the level designers and stuff who worked on that, like there's a lot of depth there, and like stuff still feels really unique even playing that first Doom, right? And it's like, so we're just sort of like just that works really well, right? It's the same reason people like sports, you know. It's the same idea. It's right, like baseball like has a bunch of rules to it, but there's like something new happens in that game all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like because there's just different combinations of stuff happens, you know. Yeah, you've just got different players with different skills and stuff. Yeah, so I mean, I think you're right on. It's like there's no reason not to like to fear sort of doing the same thing if you can just add a little bit of a twist to it.
Put one of the orcs on like whatever, he's on a tower, so now he's shooting down at you. Whole different tactical situation is completely overturned, right?
That's cool. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. All right. So I wanted to, yeah, talk about something in particular for the build the dungeon, play a dungeon. Yeah. If you're up for it.
For sure.
So I've been starting to think, cause like, you know, I'm the one who traditionally runs these, and I think I'm going to do it again this year. Cause I enjoy it. It's one of my GMing highlights of the year.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I don't plan to run it.
Yes. So, yeah. So someone's got it. So we've established that. That's good. It's on tape. So I'm starting to think about the system that I'm going to use for it. So we've used a variety of systems throughout the years on these things. The one that we've sort of settled on is, for most of these, is a system called Caltrop Core. Yes, Caltrop Core just uses, it's a really stripped down system. I really like it a lot. I think you can get it on itch.io. It might be for free. I mean, pitch the creator a couple bucks, you know, like if you're going to check it out. But it's really simple. You just roll kind of D4s, and you roll a number of those based on like kind of how good you are at the skill. And then from there, it just kind of gives you like a, you know, powered by the apocalypse style, like, hey, was it a total success, a mixed failure, or total failure, mm-hmm. right? You know, one through four on that. Right. And so then you know, if you are really good at something, you might roll, you know, 4d4 and take the highest, right? So like your percentage chances, I think it's broken down really well. The way it ends up sort of working, especially, and you can hear in the one shots if you listen to them, is like the more that you can kind of lean on your special skills, just you basically always succeed, and like that's fine, right? That's great.
Yep.
Like I really like that. So it lends itself well, I think, to one shots in which you are just like, you know, you kind of want each of the characters to feel like they have their thing. Mm-hmm. Right, and like as a sidebar, right, like we're playing a one shot, but we're also kind of producing a piece of audio that we want people to listen to. So it's nice to have characters succeed in ways that are interesting and unique sort of to themselves, because we're not going to do like kind of this big progression right of like mm-hmm. leveling up and stuff. Okay. So really that system, we've used, what did we use? We used one, there was one that we did, the Artemis, where the party was a bunch of mice. So we used,
that's right,
used a system for that, which I'm totally blanking on the name. Keep on saying
me too.
I keep wanting to say mice and mystics, but it's absolutely not that.
No. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll look it up and we can.
Didn't you also use, what's that like honey? Honey Heist. Did we use that one year?
No, I think I thought about using that, but no, I mean, okay. Yeah, but that's a good point too. Like we table that for a second. Yeah. And we've also done D&D as well. Right. Like, so like uh-huh. we've done like lots of different systems here. So I'm trying to think about like what I want to do this year. There is a certain amount of like of comfort in reaching for a system that you sort of already know, and really a lot of wisdom too, in that like, right, we're trying to like, you know, produce this thing in the span of a couple of weeks. So it's nice to not have to learn a new system, although that has never stopped me before. So I've been trying to think that through about like, is this a year to like kind of lean on Caltrop Core, you know, something that we sort of know how it works really well, or, you know, reach for something else. Right. So like you know, I just gotten the Blades in the Dark, kind of expansion DLC book in the mail. So I was thinking like, well, I mean, maybe should we do Blades in the Dark this time? Right. Like, I mean, I think that could work well as a one shot. You know, if I had some pre-gens sort of ready to go mm-hmm. on that, you know, Caltrop Core is an option. I don't think D&D is going to be an option for me, as much fun as that might be to try.
Yeah, for sure.
Try to cram on D&D. But I wanted to turn around to you. Like, I mean, yeah. Do you have any like kind of simple systems that you've run across that you really like, or any kind of, or more complex systems that you feel like do work well for, you know, a 1.5 to 2.5 hour one shot?
Yeah. So I have an answer to that question, but then I have a question I'm going to throw back at you. Yeah. I'll answer the question first. Okay. So a system I think is worth you looking into is the trophy system.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So there are a couple of iterations of it. There's Trophy Dark, which is kind of designed to tell games of like where everyone will be dead at the end of the one shot. And then there's Trophy Gold, which is a little bit more heroic. Like it's still a pretty tough system to succeed in, but like, you know, you won't be dead at the end of the session.
Yeah.
But I think that, I mean, so I the question I have for you, and the reason that comes to mind, is like, so what do you want from a game system that you'll be playing for 2 hours on a recorded podcast? Do you want something that is so straightforward and easy that it blends in the background and no one, it never steals the scene from like what the players are doing, what you're doing. Do you want something that will like throw periodic monkey wrenches into the plan? Like what do you like? Mm-hmm. Do you want something that like makes players have to make just tortured, tough mechanical choices about when to use their one resource point or, you know, that sort of thing? What do you want out of this?
That's a really good question. Yeah. And real quick, the mouse game is called Mouse Ritter. So,
That's right.
Yeah. But I think what I want out of these one shots is I want like interesting moments to happen. And like when I said really quick, like D&D, but you know, we're not going to do that. Like, I think what's one downfall of D&D is that like the interesting moments are often just like sort of like, you know, wild successes. There aren't really like interesting failures in that system as much.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I don't want to give them any resources that they feel like they need to hold on to. Right. Cause I think that also then just leads to people never using them as well. Although, I mean, maybe there's a way to kind of influence that from happening too. Yeah. So I think like the system, what I want for this is a system that's easy for people to grasp playing it, easy for people to grasp who are listening to it too. So it doesn't, there isn't like a lot of complexity that they feel like they should go and get a rule book to read up on, which is, you know, again, one reason I like Caltrap Core so much is like, it's very, very straightforward. Everybody can kind of understand it just from hearing it a little bit. Yeah, but then I want there to be like a good chance of failure and a good chance of success. And I want the players to feel like that they can influence the outcome a little bit too, as well. Like, yeah, by choosing the right skill or, you know, helping each other or whatever that may be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a roundabout way of saying that I think like I want something where the players can feel like they're powerful, but stuff can still go wrong.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. My mind goes to, I know you just said you don't want a system where people are sort of hoarding resources, but my mind does go to systems like Gumshoe or Cypher, or maybe a little less known, the new Arkham Horror RPG, where players are, when they do something, they're making a decision about how important it is to them to succeed. And so like they're spending down points in stuff based on how important the success is. To me, I think that makes it some pretty like good in the moment drama. Like, this is really important. I'm going to blow all five of my action dice on this one thing, even though that's going to leave me with nothing.
Yeah.
You know, there's some good moment to moment drama in that. Mm-hmm. So like you might want to look, like the way we run these games is like they really don't lend themselves to like complexity. So like if you ran one of these like kind of existing systems, I think you would want to look at like what's a somewhat slimmed down incarnation of this system, I guess. But I do like that, like resource management, but not in the like I'm gonna save all my points till the very end, and more of like a how much are you willing to gamble that this like attempt to persuade the queen succeeds, you know, like,
yeah.
So you might want to look into some systems that have some sort of way to spend stuff, like to give players that choice. So
does Trophy have that built in that you know of?
Don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Generally you're rolling like one or more dice. I don't think you're spending down resources in the way that like in a Cypher game or something, you're like, all right, I'm going to invest like three of my precious points in this.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I wonder like, right. So I've been playing Daggerheart, a little bit recently. And like, I really like the hope mechanic in that, the hope and fear.
Yes.
Fear mechanic. Since hope is sort of constantly refreshing, it really pushes you to just like, well, just use it, right? Cause you're gonna get it back, get it back later. It's sort of like, it feels a lot like someone took a look at inspiration from D&D and was like, how can we make this so it's not something that people just forget exists all the time?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of like that. I mean, that would be easy. Like, even if I ended up going with Caltrap Core, that'd be easy to sort of hack on top of it, I think.
Yes.
Like, I don't know. Just kind of give it out like candy and like, maybe even make it like expire at certain points too, or something like that. It's like, Yeah, like sometime in your next two rolls, you have to use it, or it's just like the next time you roll, you roll with, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, with this advantage.
I am also fond of games, like, one thing you don't always get with, like, light, really lightweight systems are characters that are mechanically really distinct from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, yeah. Like, some lightweight systems, you know, everyone's character is just a slightly different combination of like seven attribute points, right?
Yes,
like spread yeah. between a couple attributes. So, you know, I am kind of fond of a system that lets players have something, one or more things they can mechanically do that other players can't,
mm-hmm.
and isn't just a narrative thing, but is like an actual mechanical lever they can pull that nobody else can pull. Because I love, you know, when your character sheet says like, oh, when like someone you love betrays you, then you get roll an extra die to succeed or something that mm-hmm. like incentivizes you to set up these situations where you can use yeah. your cool power yeah. in a way that I don't think happens if you leave that sort of thing totally up to the imagination of the yes. player.
Yeah.
So I just wonder, even if you do are running something like Couch Up Core or whatever, if you we might consider, as because we pre-make characters for these games,
yeah.
I wonder if we could just, you know, give everyone a button or two that they can press that's like special to them.
Mm.
And maybe some of them will never find that opportunity to press the button. But by just making it an option, you incentivize people to look for a way to push that button.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I think that is, yeah. Like, if I'm thinking about the moments that I've really enjoyed in these one shots that we've done, it has been the moments where they've really leaned on, like, kind of, yeah, whatever their character trope is. Like, I think Toby had a character in that Wild West one that we did that was, I think, like, he just had, like, a ridiculous luck sort of, like, skill. Like, he just okay. had, like, a lucky skill or something yep. like that, which he rolled to great effect, you know, like, here and there. It's just like, yeah, like, this is, you know, it's going to work out for him in some way, right? And we'll kind of figure out what that is. Yeah, so, I mean, I like that a lot. Like, in some ways, it's like, I don't want, yeah, like, the ideal loadout for the party, if you will, would be there's no overlap in, like, what they can do, right? So everybody yeah. can shine in some way. It's like, yeah, it's like, you don't even have a strength stat, right? It's like, because you would never be the one to lift up, try to lift up that rock or that car.
Right,
or whatever,
right.
You know, it's always going to have to be whatever Mr. Strong Guy who's going to make that attempt.
Yeah, I always like it when you're like, all right, which one of us is going to try to move this giant rock? Mm-hmm. If the answer is something other than like, well, because of your stat points, you have like a 10% higher chance of succeeding at moving it. Mm-hmm. So you should do that. That's like the yeah. most boring
yes.
way. Like, what I'm looking for is someone who has an ability that's like once per session.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to get to your, you know, whatever, if you're trying to rescue a friend, you get to roll three times to do a feat of strength or something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I want yeah. That's the fun stuff. So.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a way we could leave that up for the players this year too. We can talk more about this, I think, when we're designing the one shot. But I wonder if there's a way to, like, right? Because like part of it is that there's like a mission. Like, they know generally what they're going to be playing, but they don't really know any of the details, right? So they kind of discover it at the table, right? Like a kind of typical one shot.
Yeah.
But I mean, I wonder if there's just like a blank spot on the character sheet, whatever system we run, which is just like, hey, you tell me what this person's like special thing is they can do once a time, right? So like maybe someone says like, I will be able to at one point in this game like lift something incredibly heavy, you know, like as a
success,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and someone else is like, I will be able to, I don't know, whatever, cast a magical spell that, you know, like that I've never heard of before, or, you know, like, right, like you see
uh-huh.
you have these like little seeds in there of like, and then I think the players might start looking for like, okay, how can I use my, you know, once per game
yeah.
lift the car car up sort of thing. Yeah,
I'm really intrigued by the idea of giving everyone their pre-made character, but on each pre-made character sheet is a line that says, once per session
yes
I can blank, if once per session if blank, then I can blank, like, you know, or something like that.
Oh, that's good. All right, I mean, this is getting to like, I know like John Corey has his, he, you know, used to run this Mad Libs game, right? Like, he would kind of do a Mad Lib to figure out like what the one shot was going to be.
Yeah.
I really like doing this for the character sheets. So
yes, that was yeah. a that was, I participated in one or two of those Mad Lib sessions, and always a treat. Yeah.
Yes. So. Yeah. So good. All right. Well, that's good. I mean, to be honest, like, you know, after having this conversation, I think what I'm leaning towards right now is doing Caltrap Core again, but adding, you know, a few little hacks here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you said, although I do want to read through Trophy, to see, cause I know I've heard, like, you've mentioned it, and I know a couple other people have mentioned it as, like, yeah, something that they really like. And I might even, I don't know if I have this right or not, I think the game that I played in that John Corey ran at the last RFTCon might have been a hack of Trophy Dark in some way.
I know he might have been.
I think he took some inspiration from it as well. This is how good I am at recognizing systems.
That's right. Well, John's my co-host on a different podcast. He can complain then if we are getting.
Yeah, that's fine. So, yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Well, we should wrap it up there. Yeah. Thanks for having this conversation. This actually really helps. Like, we were gonna have this conversation anyway, I'm sure, but like this helps kind of solidify.
Yeah,
it for me.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think that does it for us. We have been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It podcasting network. Our sister show, The Splat Book, is really great. You can go check them out at thesplatbook.com. And then you can also, as Andy just alluded to, you can go listen to Andy and John do Zombie Strains wherever you find podcasts. Indeed. It's really good. One of our friends, Aaron, just mentioned that he, Zombie Strains is kind of his number one podcast for the year. Spotify told him that he listened to more Zombie Strains than anything else this year.
I have so many mixed feelings about that. I'm so glad, but I'm also kind of sorry about that.
It's good. It is an excellent podcast. I just recommended it to someone like a week ago. We're friends in real life too when we see each other, but he had just watched I Walked with a Zombie, and I was like, oh
really?
Well, I have a podcast for you. Yeah, he's a big film buff.
Yeah, film buff, and like, that's been one of the few gems that we found so far. So
yeah, he enjoyed it. So yeah.
By the time I think when this episode goes live, the next movie we'll be talking about is a pretty iconic one, A Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price. So that's a good one. Everyone should watch it and then listen to our show. So.
Yeah, interesting. Cool. All right. Well, I think that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
And remember, if your players are having fun, you're a great GM.